Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for joining us. Across the country, kids are counting down the final days of the school year, already focused on summer vacation. While teachers are trying to squeeze out a few more days of productivity, the minds of many students have drifted to long days at the playground, trips to the pool, and no homework. One consequence of more than 2 months away from school is that skills like long division, algebra, and reading can get rusty over the break. When mid-August rolls around, some teachers face blank stares when they try to move forward. Precious instruction time gets diverted to reteaching concepts from the year before. Researchers have dubbed it summer learning loss, or more concisely, the summer slide. Today, we'll talk about how much students lose during summer break, which students are most at risk for summer slide, and what is being done to increase young people's access to educational opportunities during summer break. With me to discuss all this is Sarah Pitcock, Chief Executive Officer of the National Summer Learning Association, a nonprofit located here in Baltimore that studies how summer learning opportunities can help close the achievement gap and benefit all students. Sarah Pitcock is an expert on summer learning research, practice, and policy. Welcome to Midday, Sarah.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So, you know, isn't a certain amount of loss over the summer to be expected? I mean, I think some parents probably say, kids work pretty hard in the school year. Give them a break.
I think so, but I think that's probably not the kind of loss that we're talking about, where the concern comes into play. I do think there's a little bit of a misconception that teachers are able to catch kids up in the fall. And that's not actually true from what we see from the data. So we know from...
Why would it not be true?
Because the losses and the deficits are so great. And that's why there's kind of layers to this issue. So we know from more than 100 years worth of research that all kids lose skills in math over the summer without practice. They might lose 1 to 3 months worth of what they learned the previous school year without practice. And you can imagine why that's the case. Those math skills are, they say, easy come, easy go. The computational skills are easier to learn, but they also decay much more quickly. And math isn't as readily available in your everyday life. Most parents are not mathematicians. They don't practice a lot of math at home. So it's not as available. On the reading side, it's a different story. So middle and higher income kids, whether they're in school or not, they tend to retain and even grow their reading skills over the course of the summer months. Where the real tragedy comes into play is that low income students over the summer, they are losing 1 to 3 months worth of their reading skills each summer without practice. And this comes down to differences in the home environment and the availability of learning resources and the education level of parents and in the opportunities available to kids. So, you know, there's a few different slices. There's the loss that occurs within one summer. There's a question of whether or not kids were already behind. And then there's just this idea of opportunity and kind of leveling the playing field of opportunity. So those are all wrapped up into kind of this question about inequalities in the summer and the summer slide.
Well, I want to make sure I'm understanding what you think is going on. Let's mm-hmm. focus on the reading, because that's where you see a real difference among socioeconomic groups.
Right.
So what, I mean, is it, are we talking primarily about kind of formal activities like a camp or a summer class that middle and upper income families are more likely to put their kids in compared to what's available mm-hmm. to families who can't afford to pay for that kind of mm-hmm. opportunity? Are we talking about something that's more sort of just lifestyle?
Yeah. So it's both, I would say. Nationally, a third of households report that their children are enrolled in some sort of formal summer program. So two-thirds of kids are not. They're in parent care or self-care or some sort of informal maybe program over the summer. So nationally, the majority of kids are not involved in summer programs. With middle and higher income families, you know, it ranges from opportunities to attend a program that may be full day, that might have an intentional academic component to it, But also, they take trips. They might be more likely to go to the museum, go to the library, go to the science center. They have more books in the home. There's a lot of research on income level and the number of age-appropriate books that are in the home. And the parents typically have higher education levels and do spend more time reading with their children and things like that. So it's both the opportunity to be in a formal program and these other kinds of intangibles that are often more readily available to higher income children.
And I'm trying to get a sense of the order of magnitude that you're talking about. I mean, I think one of the hardest things to grasp about all this is the idea that summer vacation, which seems much shorter these days than when I was in school. I mean, I think of summer vacation stretching from Memorial Day to Labor Day, and it's right. Shorter than that for today's kids. Is it really long enough to have a very big impact?
It is. If you think about losing 2 to 3 months worth of what you learned during the previous school year, so just erase hard work.
The kids who lose more than the number of weeks that summer lasts. If you're talking about 3 months, that's twice as long as summer vacation.
Yeah, and it's because of that kind of, you know, the decay that happens in learning without practice. So it ranges, I would say, from 1 to 3 months is what most research shows. But, you know, so that's where this misconception we hear. Teachers, we surveyed about 500 teachers, and the majority of them said they spend at least 3 to 4 weeks each fall reteaching the previous year's skills. About a third of those teachers said they spend at least 5 to 6 weeks reteaching the previous year's skills. So you're kind of losing on the back end and the front end. And still, despite that, those losses accumulate over time. So even if you think 1 month and one summer isn't that big of a deal, it is a big deal by fifth grade, when low-income kids are on average 2.5 years behind their higher income peers.
It's cumulative.
It is cumulative, and it adds to the achievement gap that already exists when young people enter school.
Is it most of the achievement gap?
It's hard to say. That's a difficult research question to answer, but what researchers say is that it is a significant contributor to the achievement gap. Up to, I would say, probably half of the achievement gap comes from that summer learning loss over time.
So that is Sarah Pitcock, head of the National Summer Learning Association, a nonprofit that studies summer slide. This is Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Kasten. We're talking about what kids lose in the summer if they're not involved in some activities that focus them on the academic skills that they have just learned. You could be part of this conversation. Have you noticed that your kids lose some of their reading and math skills over the summer? Have you tried to slow this down? And if so, what has worked for you? Call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wipr.org. So what advice do you have for parents who feel discouraged hearing this? The New York Times just this past weekend headlined an article, "The Families That Can't Afford Summer." And it points out that many parents struggle to find affordable, just basic childcare, that many kids, older kids in disadvantaged homes spend a lot more time alone in the summer.
That's right.
I would think if you're facing those kinds of challenges and you're hearing Sarah Pitcock say, achievement right. gap, you've got to do something about it, you're just like, yeah, what can I do?
Yeah, so parents are up against really tough odds right now. In Maryland, the average reported cost for a week of a summer program is $306. And that's of families who pay, they report paying an average of about $300 per week per child.
So we're talking about like a camp?
For a camp, exactly. You can imagine that that's not just out of the reach of low-income families. That's out of the reach of middle-income families.
Sure.
And I think that's why you're starting to see, you know, we see the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and Fortune magazine all just in the past week talking about this issue. Our system, our childcare system, our school system is based on really outdated notions of parental care, dating back to probably the 50s and the 60s, when households were much more likely to have two parents and much more likely to have one parent who wasn't working. Today, many more young people are in single parent households, and that parent is a working parent. And our childcare and school systems are simply not set up to care for those kids over the summer months. So families have a horrible choice to make between working to care for their families, leaving their children at home alone often, or staying home and taking care of them, but maybe risking their job or their livelihood. So that's the truth. I can't look at you straight and tell you that this is an easy thing for families. But there are things parents can do.
Like?
There are ways to keep learning going at home. There are so many great online resources now as a place to start. Kids love screens and screen time, and there's a way to indulge that in a helpful way in the summer. Sites like PBS Kids and NASA and lots of these kind of publicly funded sites.
National Aerospace.
Yes, they have great
Space Administration
educational resources online for kids and for families. There's so much great educational content out there. Khan Academy is a great example. There's something called the Curiosity Machine that we love that pairs young people with STEM mentors who are volunteers around the country.
That's through the Khan Academy?
No, these are all separate. So Curiosity Machine is through an organization called Iridescent. And Curiosity Machine helps kids create their own STEM experiments and STEM challenges at home and gives them feedback from STEM professionals from around the country. There are a number of things that can really help parents learn alongside their kids in the summer.
You still need to kind of enforce the time, don't you? Or, I mean, are you counting on these resources that you've just told us about, which we will get from you and post some links on the Midday page at WIPR? But are you saying they're so exciting that kids, if you make a screen and an internet connection available to them, will just go there? Or do parents still have to somehow organize some pressure on kids to do this?
Certainly. I think parents all year round can be role models in learning for their kids. So if you expect your children to sit and read for 30 minutes a day, you should sit and read with them. Demonstrate, role model, you know, that reading is a fun habit and a fun part of life. And so similarly, I think as parents, help understand what your kids are interested in. This is what I tell every parent. That's how you should start the summer. Find out what your kids are most interested in. That might not be something they have a choice to explore during the school year. And summer is a time to really do interest-based learning. And so I tell parents, if you get the summer reading list and your kid wants to cry and doesn't want to read anything on that list, put it aside. Figure out what they want to read about. And if you find what they're interested in ESPN the magazine instead of A Tale of Two Cities, that's okay. Let kids read, let their interests drive what they're doing in the summer. So I think parents can be facilitators of interest-driven learning, and it should always, always be a mix and a balance of screen time and kind of sedentary learning with active learning and play and getting outside.
Okay, lots more to talk about. We need to take a quick break here. When we come back, more about the fight against summer slide. There are people who want to be part of this conversation. We'll talk to them. You can join the conversation by calling us at 410-662-8780 or sending us an email at midday@wypr.org. Are your kids excited to choose the books they read rather than reading assigned books? Let us know how that's working out. I'm Sheila Cass. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. If you're a parent, you may be trying to brainstorm ways to keep your children entertained once summer vacation begins.
Today we're talking about why the goal should not just be to keep them from being bored, but to get them to exercise their academic skills, even when they're out of school. Sarah Pitcock is here with me in the studio. Sarah Pitcock is head of the National Summer Learning Association, a nonprofit that studies summer slide, the tendency of some students to lose some reading and math abilities over the summer. And joining us to talk about some local free activities for families is Marisa Connor, Youth Services Manager for the Baltimore County Public Library System. Welcome to Midday, Marisa.
Hi, thank you.
So give me a sense of how the Baltimore County Libraries approach the kinds of questions we're talking about.
Well, reading is so important in the summer, but so is all kinds of learning. So we approach it, library programs have really evolved over the years from just kids keeping reading lists to making it really fun and challenging for the kids. So we create games for all age groups and challenges from birth all the way through adults, actually. And in combination with the reading, we have programs. Children need cultural experiences and problem-solving experiences. So we bring in the fun types of learning, making, technology, things like that. So we provide a wide variety of programs that focus on the kinds of things that will help kids in school but aren't like school, because kids want to have fun in the summer. But we know they need these kinds of experiences during the summer months.
How do you organize these programs based on what kids and families have asked for in previous years, or how do you know what's going to hit the spot?
Well, that's an important part, is knowing what kids like. But we're also, in Maryland, we're part of a national collaborative, which is the Collaborative Summer Library Program. And Maryland librarians are very involved with librarians across the country. So we come up with themes together. Like this year, it's interesting you said exercise, because this is On Your Mark, Get Set, Read. And we know that kids need to exercise their brains as well as their bodies. So we have got a lot of fitness things in our program this year. So keeping kids active in many ways.
I would imagine that families that turn to the library in the summer think it sounds normal, and some families probably think, library in the summer, really? What kind of attendance or do you get many people coming to the library in the summer?
When the schools are gearing down, our librarians are gearing up. Our libraries are absolutely filled in the summer. We have kids of all ages coming, families of all ages. And just to give you an idea of how our numbers have changed through the years, we started counting summer participation back in 1984 with 3,522 kids participating. To last year, we had 57,000 participants.
57,000.
And we also are serving summer lunch in many of our locations, so we're also providing nutrition for their bodies. We do that in conjunction with our school system. And as the research around summer slide has come to light, it's even more critical. Libraries are known to really provide the kinds of experiences that kids need, and it's proven through some of that research that I'm sure our other guests will share. But
Let me ask Sarah Pitcock what goes through her mind when she hears Marisa Connor of the Baltimore County Public Library System describe this beehive of activity. Do you hear this kind of thing from lots of public library systems?
Absolutely. Marisa is exactly right and representative of, I think, libraries across the country that have intentionally started to shift from summer reading to summer learning, a much more kind of holistic viewpoint of what can happen in their spaces in the summer. Libraries are trusted community hubs. They are embedded into our communities. They're often within walking distance of many homes. And I have seen in person exactly what she has described. I was in Chicago last summer at the Chicago Public Library Summer Program, and there were kids, I talked about NASA earlier, making space gloves. Marisa mentioned the kind of making spaces. So you don't just go to the library to get books and to read anymore. You go to learn in all sorts of hands-on ways, to create art projects, to conduct experiments, to learn from experts in the community. So libraries are one of the best assets that communities have in the summer.
Storm has called us from Baltimore with a comment about library. Storm, welcome to Midday.
Hi. I actually was calling before the woman from the Baltimore County Library came on because I really wanted to shout out the public library's summer reading program. I was fortunate where my mother pushed me and helped me participate in them in Howard County growing up, and I participated almost every year in some of my favorite experiences. And I can actually really attribute my current, you know, voracious love of reading to the summer reading programs. And I know that Howard County still does them, and Baltimore and Anne Arundel, you know, I'm friends with librarians who do them. It's always my favorite time of year to get kids out to the libraries and to read.
Storm, I appreciate the call. We're getting some interference on your cell connection, so I'm going to let you go. But I appreciate your calling. And Marisa Connor, I listened to all the support, but I also listened to you describe the huge range of activities that apparently Baltimore County mm-hmm. libraries offer. And I think, how do you afford this?
Well, we're fortunate that we do have a programming budget to bring in programs. For example, we bring in programs like from the National Aquarium. We've got a shark program this summer. We also have like a nano exhibit from Port Discovery that they actually provide for free through partnerships. But we also we've purchased materials, things like Legos and maker supplies, 3D printers. And so our librarians have been trained to do these types of programs with kids. And we were fortunate this year that our Maryland Library Division at the Maryland State Department of Ed purchased laptop computers for us to use with youth of all ages. So we're doing Minecraft programs, we're doing coding programs, digital literacy is something that's really important, and getting those programs from our state library has really allowed us to expand some types of offerings that we do with kids.
So how many laptops do you have there? And they're used, these are used in the physical library? Or
yes. Our library, depending on your library system size, you either got 10 or 20. We have a large library system, so we got 20 laptops. It came preloaded with a lot of software and programs that are educational, and we've added things. We could even do music production programs with these laptops. And so we share them among our branches. We just pass them off to each other, and the kids can do some amazing things with these. So they've really enjoyed it, and we have a lot planned for the summer. We've also partnered with places like Digital Harbor in Baltimore and Future Makers, and they've trained our staff on how to use the technology with kids in fun, exciting ways. Things like making art bots out of toothbrushes that wiggle, and you know, they get a challenge that, you know, they have to make a drawing robot using certain materials, things like that.
That is Marisa Connor, Youth Services Manager for the Baltimore County Public Library System, here on Midday on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. With me here in the studio is Sarah Pitcock, who is an expert on summer learning research, practice, and policy. She's CEO of the National Summer Learning Association. And you can be part of this conversation. You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org, or you can phone us at 410-662-8780. I want to pull somebody else into the conversation. Matthew is calling us from Frederick. Matthew, I understand that you are a father of four and have been a teacher for 2 decades.
Yes, ma'am, that's correct. Thanks for having me on the program.
What are your thoughts about summer learning?
Well, I have found that the Maryland Public Library System has probably been at the forefront of some of the most vigorous campaigns to reverse summer slide. From my experiences as a reading and language arts teacher, but it also requires that accountability from the parents to find that same sense of value and importance and excitement about coming to the libraries and bringing their children there. And along that same place, I find that, you know, the real seat of power in this country is not government. You know, it's a parent's lap reading to their child as much as possible in every possible way at any given time to sit down and invest in reading and the love of literacy, words, letters, concepts, themes, and ideas to generate that kind of excitement with their children, not only to create those bonds, but to show the kids that, you know, you as the parent are just as invested in that learning experience and being enriched by whatever is being read. In terms of, like, combating summer slide and what we see in classrooms and what I see as a parent, some of the things that I've really enjoyed, we have at home during the summers, with my kids, we have, like, Adventure Week, where we go out and do a lot of experiential learning, a lot of hands-on concepts of things that they've done in school now or things that are coming up in the upcoming school year. We go out and find hands-on opportunities, whether they be historical or artistic or scientific, to really pursue the knowledge in a hands-on way, where you know, you're almost like a literary intellectual archaeologist out there sifting the levels of learning and really being hands-on with the tools in really fun and vibrant ways.
Matthew, I appreciate all these ideas, and I especially love your metaphor that the seat of power in this country is the lap of a parent who is reading to their child. But let me take that to my other guests, because I would imagine there are many parents who love the concept and have a hard time finding the time. Marisa Connor from Baltimore County Public Libraries, let me ask you about that. I mean, you talked about a huge surge in the number of in the attendance at public libraries in the summer. But do parents have a hard time making time for it, or do they tend to drop the kids off and count on you and your staff to make that experience happen for their kids?
Well, I think it depends on the age. Obviously, the younger children are coming with their parents, and our programs, honestly, are filled with parents of preschoolers, babies, elementary age youngsters all through the summer. So they're finding time. And our library hours have expanded to meet the needs of families that work. Like, we're open 4 nights a week, we're open all day Saturday, and we're open on Sunday afternoons. So no matter what a parent's schedule, the idea is that they can come at any time, and many of our programs and materials are available throughout the day, so families can access that. So teenagers obviously are coming by themselves, so, and we have lots of opportunities for them. We have gaming programs and different places where, and we have library staff that care about kids, you know, so if they come without parents, there's other caring adults to be those models for them.
Sarah Pitcock, let me ask you how Matthew's comments about the power of a parent reading to a child, and you mentioned it earlier, but what do you find in terms of how to make that happen for families that might like to do it, but just have a lot of other pressures on them?
Well, I think, you know, we as an organization are very focused on kids who are behind academically, and it's kind of a different story. So I think, as I said earlier, a lot of families are working. They would probably love to be home and read with their kids and spend more time on learning during the summer, but it's really hard for them. And this is where we need our schools and our community-based organizations and our city resources to kind of step up and play a role and help parents out. If young people are behind, which so many of them are, so, you know, 80% of minority students are not proficient in reading by fourth grade in this country. So
4 out of 5 minority kids
are not proficient in reading.
Which probably means they don't, I'm not saying it's a cause, but well, I should ask because you're an expert in the research. Is it a cause or an effect of that or both that they don't, if they don't like reading?
I don't think it has really anything to do with liking it, frankly. I think it has to do with a number of factors that limit academic achievement. I think interest is on the low end of the scale. It has to do sometimes with undiagnosed health problems, with missing too much school, with not having books in the home. But for those young people, we need to be talking about more than just the summer reading list. Those young people need more time for learning, more dedicated, focused time for learning, often from a teacher in the summer months. So, you know,
you're talking about summer school.
I'm talking about summer learning. You know, we promote.
Well, I'm trying to picture the setting that you're describing.
Sure, it can happen in school. It can happen in a rec center. It can happen in a church. It can happen just about anywhere. We're seeing it more and more in public housing authorities, for example. But it is kind of a focused instruction from an expert in literacy and in math to not only, you know, remediate a loss or keep kids treading water, because treading water is not enough if you're behind. So we need to use the summer months to get ahead too. And so that's where the role of schools comes into play. And what we're seeing increasingly is maybe it's not a full day summer school program, but it's teachers that are being deployed out into community settings where kids are. So maybe it is in a public housing setting, maybe it's at a rec center or a park, and they're coming. Maybe they have a tablet with one of these great new fun interactive reading applications on it, personalized learning platforms. For an hour a day, they're doing reading with young people in the settings where they are. That makes a huge difference, and we need a lot more of that. So there, I shared some statistics earlier about sort of the supply of summer programs. Among families who are not participating in a summer program, 51% of them say they would if a program that was affordable to them was available. So there is huge unmet demand.
Let me ask Marisa Connor before I have to let her go. People who heard Sarah Pidcock lay out for us, Marisa, the extent of the problem of summer slide and the amount that of skills, academic skills that kids have at risk. And then they hear about all the excitement that you're describing, may think, okay, libraries are the answer. Are you willing to claim that as a librarian?
I am. I think we're critical. I really do. We have everything we have is free. It's accessible to all. And whether the parents, you're with them or not, we do, our librarian staff are trained to do programming. We're learning from experts in the field of science and math and teachers. They're not teachers, but they are doing teaching. We have early literacy. We actually have a staff in our system of early literacy experts that do all our birth to five programs because we believe this starts at birth. There's a critical learning time for kids to come into school ready. So, and recreational reading has been proven to help the reading skills. So we want kids reading for fun as well. So I do think we play a critical role. We have programs. Some even libraries call them classes. And we have lots of materials, and we have lots of online things, too. So for those kids that don't have books or computers or tablets in their home, they can access all of that at the library. And if they do have it at home, they can even access online things. So we do have a lot to offer.
Marisa Connor, Youth Services Manager for the Baltimore County Public Library System. I appreciate your giving us this insight into what you do. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We need to take another short break here. When we come back, we'll keep talking about how parents can affect the dreaded summer slide loss of academic skills by kids over the summer. Sarah Pidcock will stay with us, and we'll take your calls. You can call us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. I'm Sheila Cast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. During the summer months, most young people lose about 2 months of math skills, and low-income kids can also lose 2 to 3 months of reading skills. Today, we're discussing what researchers call the summer slide and what parents and educators can do to make sure students start the new year off on the right foot, the new school year. Sarah Pidcock is with me. She's an expert on summer learning research, practice, and policy, CEO of the National Summer Learning Association. And we're taking your calls at 410-662-8780 or through an email at midday@wypr.org. Does your child's school send her home with a summer packet of activities or assigned reading? Do you find that helpful? Are you planning to send your child child to camp or a club over the summer. How did you find it? How did you choose it? As I said, call us at 410-662-8780. Matthew from Frederick is still with us, father of four, a teacher. Matthew, before I let you go, I just wanted to get a sense of whether this discussion of libraries, you said already that you think libraries do a lot. Do you think that they actually can fill in the gap?
Well, I think what they do is they provide a safe place to take a lot of literary risk in the entire environment of a library. Children are surrounded by books, by people who love books, by people who care about technology and the art and vigorous activity involved with literature and learning. So I think just like statistics have shown that having books literally just in the home help children understand and know more about reading and literacy. I think being surrounded in those types of environments is fundamental to helping to almost save the academic lives of children who fall into those gaps during the summer and experience losses of learning in various forms.
I appreciate you joining us, Matthew. I'm going to take a call from Chris, who's calling us from Columbia. Chris, welcome to Midday.
Thank you. I wanted to point out a program that my Rotary Club helped start here in Howard County in conjunction with the Head Start program. It's a summer enrichment program for graduates of Head Start. Right now we've built it up to 8 weeks, I think, serving about 270, 300 kids. It's a full-day program involving academics and fun. And so it helps fill in the gap for those who can't afford it, and when you think about how long a percentage of the lifespan, 2 months, is in a four-year-old, it's really quite significant.
Yeah, that's a good point. Summer, which seems short to me, is a long time for a young person. Thanks for telling us about that program, Chris. Chris talked about the transition to kindergarten. I'm curious about other transition points, Sarah. For example, is summer slide a particular problem when a kid is moving from into middle school or from middle school into high school? Is that a particularly dangerous time for summer slide?
So I wouldn't say it's a particularly dangerous time for summer slide in terms of the academic loss. I would say it's a particularly important opportunity, often in terms of the social-emotional transitions that kids need to make from elementary to middle and middle and high school that can, if not done well, really plague their academic success. So we see a lot of school districts making those targeted investments in what they call bridge programs or kind of orientation programs between elementary and middle school and middle school and high school to get kids acclimated to a new campus, a new schedule, a new set of teachers, a new set of expectations in terms of their autonomy and how they behave. And then often on top of that, there are some very critical research-based indicators of long-term academic success. So one of those is Algebra 1 readiness by ninth grade. So we do see a lot of districts really investing in that summer between eighth and ninth grade and helping make sure kids are ready for Algebra 1 by ninth grade, because as I said, it's a very strong indicator of whether or not they will graduate from high school and go on and have academic success.
So schools will put effort into that, into making some kind of a summer program available specifically readying kids for Algebra 1.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, school districts have limited resources. They have a lot of different things that they would love to fund. And so what we see is them getting very kind of precise and exacting in terms of what they fund in the summer. So we'll see a lot of kindergarten through third grade reading programs, because we know that fourth grade benchmark of reading proficiency is highly indicative of how successful kids will be. And similarly, those fifth to sixth grade transitions and the eighth to ninth grade.
When we talk about the summer learning loss,
summer slide, is it really primarily an elementary school phenomenon, or does it happen with older students also?
Well, it's an important time to focus on all the way up to and into college, actually. Whether or not it's because of a specific loss occurring in the summer, or just as I said before, because kids are behind. So I mentioned the fourth grade reading and math proficiency levels are abysmal in this country. The eighth grade ones are not any better. They're actually slightly worse. When we think about this issue, it is far more than just a slide or a loss that occurs over the summer. It's a solution to the achievement gap overall. There's some really compelling research that describes a phenomenon called the summer melt. And this
the summer
happens.
Melt?
The summer melt happens the summer between senior year of high school and freshman year of college, believe it or not. So the summer melt describes this phenomenon where, primarily among first-generation college attenders, you know, we think that the high bar to set is that they get accepted to college. But what we find is among those who are accepted to college, 33% of them fail to enroll in the fall if they don't have support and counseling in that summer between high school and college. There's some research I've heard that, you know, the average cost that prevents a low-income child from making it into that to college in the fall is $86. So it's often something like they didn't have a ride, or they didn't know how to fill out a form, or they missed a deadline or some sort of fee that they can't pay. So summer programs between high school and college are just as critical even as they are for younger kids. So, you know, we like to see it as more of an opportunity than necessarily always remediating some sort of deficit.
What does the research tell us about what happens with kids in municipal school districts that have year-round school mm-hmm. versus school systems that take a long mm-hmm. summer break?
So the evidence is mixed, and what we've seen nationally, I would say, in the past decade, is most of the schools in the districts that have gone to a year-round calendar have gone back to a traditional calendar. And year-round is actually a misnomer. I prefer to call it a balanced calendar because it's the same number of days. You're not actually adding any additional days. It's 180 days of school. It's just balanced more equally throughout the year, so you have more shorter breaks instead of one long break.
But what does that do in terms of students hanging on to their academic achievements?
So it doesn't do much. So that's why most districts have gone back. What we see is that the same amount of loss occurs. It's just spread out over the course of the year. So even those districts that have gone to year-round schools or balanced calendars, they still have to provide support during those intersessions and those breaks, even though they're shorter.
Well, wait a minute. How long does a child need to be out of the classroom before the skills start to decay?
I think in as little as a week, skills start to decay. So most of those breaks in a balanced calendar are going to be about 2 weeks to 3 weeks long, and that is certainly enough
That's
time.
That's enough time mm-hmm. to actually lose your place.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, if I have a busy work day and then leave on a Friday, by Monday morning I might have forgotten what I was working on Friday. So I think the same thing happens for kids.
Huh. We got an email from Kelly raising some questions about schools and libraries. Let me prowl through part of this. As a family, we frequent the Carroll County Public Library System. Programs there are wonderful, but sometimes hard to get into due to the huge demand. My kids are also very excited for the summer reading program this year because they know that the elementary school has a big celebration when they get back to school in the fall. I'm a stay-at-home mom, so it's easier for me to get my kids to the library for these events. We also participate in the Carroll County Public School Summer Enrichment Program. It is an inexpensive camp, and it keeps my kids learning during the summer months. In addition to reading at home and taking them to parks, those are the two big things we do to prevent summer slide. A good approach?
It's a great approach. And I think that she raises some good points about unmet demand. And I think we've talked about what parents can do in terms of reading and learning activities at home. Parents can also advocate in their community for more summer learning opportunities. You can go to your county executive, to your mayor, to your library commissioner, and advocate for these opportunities. And I think that's actually what's really important.
Well, that reminds me. I wanted to ask you, because right now in the city of Baltimore, there is a standoff between Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake and the city council over $4.2 million in funding for summer youth programming. The Rawlings-Blake administration sees that money as a one-time boost for last year's budget. City Council President Jack Young and Budget Chairwoman Helen Holton have said they won't pass, they won't approve the mayor's $2.6 billion spending plan unless that youth funding is restored. Is this kind of thing common? Do summer programs tend to come and go because of funding issues?
They do, and it's a huge problem. Summer is often funded with leftovers, so the funding is kind of episodic, and programs come and go, and that means that families can never depend on them. They don't create habits of participation, and they don't actually, you know, make lasting differences in children's lives if they're here today and gone tomorrow. So there are some cities, I know the city council here has proposed a dedicated budget set aside for youth programs. Cities like Oakland and Seattle have dedicated budget set-asides, or maybe they have a tax levy specific for youth programs. Those are the places where you see the big long-term results, is because they've actually committed to their investment in young people.
Next month, you're going to be celebrating Summer Learning Day.
That's
what is
right.
Summer Learning Day?
Summer Learning Day is our big national advocacy day, where we shine a bright light on the amazing programs that are happening around the country, but also on the unmet need. So we will have programs and events. Last year we had almost 800 all across the country. We at the National Summer Learning Association do a big media push, a big social and traditional media push. We have been partnered with the White House this year, so the President and the First Lady will be involved in Summer Learning Day and helping to spread the word about the importance of summer learning opportunities.
And so the day is?
July 14th, and you can go to summerlearningday.com. We have a map that will show events and programs that you can search, I think, by zip code.
Summerlearningday.com?
Yes.
.com. Okay. We've talked about some ways, different ways that school systems and counties are trying to address this. We haven't actually talked about free books, just putting books out there. I saw a tweet this morning, Lakeland School in Baltimore thanking T. Rowe Price for putting together summer bags for fourth and fifth graders, and the picture was books, so I gather that's what's in those summer bags. Mm-hmm. Is that something that many places are doing, and is it enough to have an impact, just the books?
Yeah, that's such a great question. It is a really common and increasingly popular strategy, you know, kind of a book distribution model. It can be very effective, but typically not on its own. So what the research shows us, believe it or not, I mentioned this earlier about interest-based learning, kids need to be reading based on their interest. They actually learn more when it's a book that they've chosen. And the book needs to be at their reading level. It can't be too hard and it can't be too easy. It needs to be at the appropriate level. And they need somebody to check comprehension with them. So somebody to ask a question about what they're reading along the way.
We're flat out of time. I really have enjoyed this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Sheila.
Sarah Pitcock, Chief Executive Officer of the National Summer Learning Association. And also thanks to Marisa Connor of the Baltimore County Public Library System, who spoke with us earlier. I want to thank Eddie's of Roland Park for providing lunch for our guest today. Eddie's is a full-service market with locations on North Charles Street and on Roland Avenue in Roland Park. Their deli features unique sandwiches and salads, and it's all described at their website, eddiesofrolandpark.com. And thank you for listening. Tune in tomorrow. Baltimore always has lots of people who love beer, but right now it's the scene for thousands of people who brew beer and cider and porter and other yeasty drinks. They're in town for Homebrew Con, the annual gathering of the American Home Brewers Association. Should be a fun hour tomorrow. I'm Sheila Cast. Have a great afternoon.
Midday is produced by Maureen Harvey and Andrea Appleton. The show is engineered by Luke Spicknall. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming are available at WYPR.org or on demand using the WYPR app. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.